Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Tradcat Night Radio. I am Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Tradcat Night, your one-stop website for all of the day's latest church apostasy news and end-time news. Now, Tradcat Night is featured all over the alternative media circuit, and I'm doing my best to keep you up to date on all the latest happenings from around the world as we head closer to the fruition of the Third Secret of Fatima. My good friends, hit that subscription button and notification button right here on YouTube so you can get all the latest videos sent directly to your email. You can now find these talks / podcasts on SoundCloud. So we're making some segue there on SoundCloud. Make sure you get over to SoundCloud, search Tradcat Night, and follow along. If I can also ask, please click the PayPal button and get behind this apostolate. As you know, this is an information war, and so I appreciate all those who've been praying and financially contributing to this website. Now, today is February 6th, 2018, and I have a new guest to the program. His talks can be seen all over YouTube. He's a friend of Rogue Money Radio, a show that I go on, and I've had V the Gorilla on quite a bit on my show, Harley Schlanger. And I'm going to probably hand it over to him here in a minute so he can get a little bit more into his background and his work and what he's hoping to accomplish with his website. But just in general, Harley has an undergraduate degree from the University of Wisconsin, master's degree in European history from Rutgers University. His website is larochepack.com, and he covers economics, geopolitics, politics. And he's got a good thing going on over with that website. And, again, I don't want to take too much of this 30 minutes up here, Harley. And I want to kind of hand it over to you. Maybe you can give us a little bit more about your background, the website, some of the areas that, you're covering and, you know, what you're hoping to accomplish. And then we'll just kind of pick it up with current events, I guess.
Sure. Well, thanks for inviting me on with you tonight, Eric, and very happy to be with you and talking to your listeners. I have a 40-something year relationship with Lyndon LaRouche. I've been the national spokesman for Mr. LaRouche since 1999, but I go back to the early 70s with him. Our commitment over all those years has been to reverse the errors that were made and that have been compounded since the end of the 60s, early 70s, in particular the breakup of the Bretton Woods system, taking the dollar off gold, which was done by Nixon in 1971, the encroachment on policy of what people today know as the deep state, what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, whether you call them financial oligarchs, the establishment, the Illuminati, whatever you call them. These are people who have no concern or interest with the security and well-being of the American people. And what we've done, whether it's running campaigns or putting out a weekly intelligence journal called Executive Intelligence Review, doing webcasts, all that we're doing is oriented toward giving people deeper insights into the corruption of this establishment, but also solutions, ways that we can not just defeat them, but return this country back to the traditions of the American economic system of physical economy. So that's mostly what I do. I'm now located in right near Berlin, Germany, where I moved about a year and a half ago. But for most of those 40-something years, I was in Houston, Texas, running political operations for Lyndon LaRouche.
Great. Yeah. Now, in terms of economics, I guess we'll just kind of stay on that topic while you have mentioned it. We've got, of course, now stocks bracing for third day of row in terms of losses. Banks now closing branches at the fastest pace in decades, some websites are reporting. Can you give us an overall your viewpoint on where we're at in terms of the economy? Is it sustainable? When does this Ponzi scheme, if you will, collapse? I had recently Lynette Zhang on. She seemed to think that for the first 6 months of this year, perhaps we'd be okay, but then things would turn, things would go sour, if you will. What's your take on what we're seeing?
Well, it's overripe for a crash, but that doesn't mean a crash is going to happen, although the last couple of days have given some indications that the so-called solutions of the last post-2008 period are not solutions at all. Look, the basic point is that since 2008, not only was nothing done to resolve the problems were made worse. The too-big-to-fail banks were given a get-out-of-jail-free card. They're allowed to do bail-ins, which means steal depositors' money. If they run into problems, they're going to be bailed out. And the government will bail them out because, from the standpoint of the government, there's nothing more important than protecting the money center banks. So my view is that we've had a stock bubble that was built up first under Obama. It's continuing to be built up. When you ask, is it sustainable? It's not sustainable because a bubble, the bubble that exists is largely a debt bubble. There's been a huge volume of virtually free money from the central banks, the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, and so on, given to the largest commercial banks, not for production, not to create new jobs or rebuild manufacturing capability, but to pour to the into their own stock buying, and also to their blue chip clients to buy their own stock. And so it created the biggest stock bubble in history. So we've seen a so-called correction in the last few days. Is this a correction or is this the blowout? I think what we're seeing today is what's called the plunge protection team, where people from the Fed and the money center banks monitor things closely, figure out where to pour huge amounts of money to try and stop the hemorrhaging. Maybe they'll succeed for a couple of days, maybe even for a few weeks or months. But the system as a whole is so overloaded with debt, and it's not just U.S. government debt. That's somewhere now around 21, 22 trillion. But it's corporate debt, and non-financial corporations are holding 14 trillion in debt that's highly leveraged. There's student debt. There's bank debt, bank derivatives. You know, banks are carrying hundreds of trillions of dollars of derivative obligations on their books. And they say, don't worry about it because they're hedged, they're backed by swaps and other kinds of insurance. Well, we should worry about it because it means they're trading financial instruments for profit that have absolutely nothing backing them.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that is very concerning, not only in the Christian community, but just in general, I guess, across America, is, you know, this notion of this reset coming, maybe collapse is an overstatement. What can Americans do to prudently prepare for this reset, which so many of us are, we see it on the horizon. It's not too far off, whether it's, you know, a few months from now, a couple of years, who knows. And then secondarily, Harley, what does a post-reset America look like? I know a lot of countries are moving away from the dollar, but how will our economy, or lack thereof, affect, you know, the Pacific, the Asian markets or European markets? What does the post-reset world look like?
That's a good question. How do we move away from the dollar when that's our currency? You know, I think that there's a lot in that question, so let me start with the obvious point, which is that I'm not sure that there's any secure investment out there. And people have for years talked about gold. Gold is a rigged market. People were praising Bitcoin. That's proven to be a rigged market. The Ponzi scheme creators have no limits on their ability to create new Ponzi schemes. The question is, how long can they be sustained? And how many people get fooled into going into them. Now, the most important thing people can do is fight to take power away from this elite. Because, as I pointed out earlier, they have no concern whether you can pay your rent or pay your college tuition for your kids or put food on the table or cover your doctor's bills and medical costs. Their only concern is to keep churning the pump so that they have the ability to sustain their power, which is totally based on this fictitious value of the dollar. Now, you mentioned the other thing, which is really important, the moves that are going on around the rest of the world. I don't think, and it's Mr. LaRouche's view, that we're at a point where we're going to see a dumping of the dollar, because at the moment, that's not in the interests of the Chinese or the Russians or even the Europeans. And I can say some things about Europe, but it's completely messed up here with the euro. It's, right. It's worse than the dollar even. But what we're seeing is a move toward what we've been fighting for, which is called physical economy. There are two kinds of credit. One is the kind of credit we've seen at creating the bubble economy, which is new debt to pay old debt. It's like paying a mortgage with a credit card. It doesn't work. And that's what the whole Western financial system is. The other thing is that you generate credit that goes into something physical, that builds something, whether it's a family business or homes or infrastructure or manufacturing or funds that go into research and development to bring online new technologies. When you put credit into those areas, you have a return, because you're producing something which hopefully will increase the productivity of the whole economy, especially when you talk about infrastructure. So this is what the Chinese are trying to do. They're doing it on this program, this large-scale infrastructure program called the Belt and Road. But the important thing is that they're borrowing a lot from the old American system of taking the hot air out of their bubble, because they did have some air in their bubble, but generating credit for production, which creates jobs, which creates wealth, and wealth not in the form of funny money, but wealth in the form of physical goods that are needed for people's livelihood. So what people who are legitimately frightened by what they see coming down the road with this economy need to fight to get Congress scared to death to continue this game. Now, the problem we have with that is that we're up against literally billions of dollars of lobbying money. Plus, we know the FBI blackmails congressmen. Congressmen, you know, themselves, many of them are greedy. There's certainly not a lot of good Christians in the U.S. Congress. So we've got to put the fear of God in them, that they're not going to get elected if they continue to back these financial policies which benefit the upper 1% and destroy the middle class and the productive workforce in this country. And I think one of the things that I can offer your listeners is if you go to our website, which is larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, you can download something called LaRouche's Four Laws, which is a very simple way of attacking the banks by returning to Glass-Steagall banking separation, which means no more bailouts of investment banks, a national credit policy, funds for infrastructure, and special emphasis on cutting-edge technologies. Those 4 points will strengthen the dollar or put something behind the dollar. And if we can do that, we can start addressing some of the other problems. But if we don't do that, we're seeing a bubble that when it pops, it's going to be hard for people to sustain themselves. There's no other way of putting it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, my last question in regards to economics, if you will, I always ask my guests this, is cryptos. I want to get your take on cryptocurrencies, pros, cons. There seems to be a shift, if you will, into this digital economy. Are we being suckered into it by the New World Order, however you want to label it, deep state? I know there's various terms to kind of identify the same people. I know it seems on the surface that they're not controlling this area now, but what, you know, maybe down the road they do control it. I know there's some guests, I'm going to have Max Egon on who thinks that that's the direction we're going to be headed. I know V the Gorilla kind of stands on the opposite side. He'll say that, you know, cryptos are good. What do you make of the whole crypto madness, if you will?
Well, I think what we've seen is the problem, which is that if your idea is that you're going to replace a currency that has nothing behind it with a cryptocurrency that has nothing behind it, what's the benefit? The people who control it are the ones who are going to benefit from it. If it's a government, or let's just say a globalist government, you know what they're going to do. They're going to do the same thing they've done previously, except you're no longer going to have access to cash or anything else. If it's a private market, there's no guarantee that you're not just going to get ripped off. So I think the problem is that, and you know, there may be areas where digital currencies will work, But right now, they're primarily being used for the sake of making very large speculative profits. And anytime you have something that's set up with that as its intention, what you're doing is creating a sucker game where people go into it thinking they're going to get something for nothing, and they end up with nothing. So I think as it stands now, it's a diversion. It's highly susceptible to speculation and also ultimately to government control.
Yeah, that's a fair point, I believe. Now, you've got a new article on the website. I think it just came out, today, actually. And it relates to the new Grassley memo. Why don't you get everyone caught up to date on the latest with this memo, attempted possible coup against Trump? I've always asked my guests this as well. You know, if Trump is the real deal within our kind of own little community, Harley, it's kind of like a 50-50 split. Some see him kind of as being, a puppet. Some see him as being the real deal, whatever. Push that, aside. But let's say he is the real deal. I mean, what's the real possibility of him being taken out like JFK?
Well, again, you ask very good questions because they get right to the heart of a whole pattern of developments. You know, is Trump the real deal? I think Trump is who he is. He's someone who's, in a way, outside the establishment, but inside the establishment. He's someone who definitely is not easily controllable. But he's also someone who, on his own, ran a campaign to destroy the Bush machine and the Clinton machine. And if nothing else is done by Trump, that in itself is a great service to this country. And you can see the vehemence with which the Mueller investigation is going on against Trump as the reaction of the Bush and Clinton Republican and Democratic one-party types to Trump's presidency. He doesn't go along with the status quo, which is endless wars, endless bailouts, free trade agreements, and so on. That's something he doesn't support. Now, what he does fully support, we don't know yet. He made some good promises in his campaign. He called for restoring Glass-Steagall to separate banking, again, the commercial banks from the investment banks. He did take us out of the free trade agreement that Obama pushed through. He took us out of the Paris Climate Accord. So there's some things he's done which show that he's not owned by the establishment. On the other hand, he has people like these Goldman Sachs alumni in there, Mnuchin and Cohn. He's got some of the neocons making his strategic policy. I think the most important thing to look to is, will he and a group of Republicans come together to destroy this fraud called Russiagate? You know, I think the best thing that can be said about him is that he's shown that he's not going to capitulate, and that he's willing to fight it in the open. The reason I think they were able to kill John Kennedy is that Kennedy was waging this fight mostly behind closed doors. And so the CIA and the deep state of his time figured they could take him out and no one would pay attention. With Trump, if he's assassinated, people are going to know pretty quickly who did it and who's going to cover it up. So I think he's very clever in the way he's using the Twitter, his network, to inform people of some of these developments. But the other point that's important, to go back to Grassley and the Nunes memos, our organization put out a dossier on Robert Mueller, who we know quite well because he was running the Get LaRouche task force in the 1980s. And he's a corrupt establishment figure. Those people who think that he's working with Trump to bring down Clinton and pedophiles and others, forget it. He's as inside as you can get. But he's been dealt a bad hand. There's no evidence of Russian meddling. There's no evidence of Trump collusion. There is evidence of collusion of the Democratic Party, the Clinton campaign, the FBI, the CIA, with British intelligence. That's the foreign collusion. To come up with a fake narrative to tie Trump's hands and possibly to impeach him or, if necessary, kill him. So I think people have to stand behind him, even though we know he's got faults and he's not necessarily the best messenger for this message. But as long as he's going to fight and keep bring into the open the web of corruption around people like John Brennan and Barack Obama, the Clinton crowd, and the Bush crowd, as long as he's going to do that, we should support him. And let's see where things go.
Yeah, fair point. And another area that Trump is doing a good job in is with illegal immigration. I don't know if you saw this morning. It was actually on ESPN. He made a statement. I guess it was on Twitter. I don't really follow his Twitter handle all too much. But he was basically calling the death of this recent Colts player, Edwin Jackson, who apparently was killed by an illegal immigrant who was suspected of drinking and driving.
Yeah.
And I know this is an area that he's tackled. I'm appreciative, certainly, in that area. But I wanted to follow up on one point, if I could. You kind of mentioned this neocon push for war. And I believe you recently did an article within this past week talking about these neocon crazies. And you basically had four interrelated dynamics, if you will, of this global strategic situation that's coming to a head. Maybe you can kind of give us a synopsis of this. It's a very in-depth article. I read it this morning, and maybe you can give the listeners kind of a synopsis of what's going on here with these neocons.
Well, essentially, since they've been ineffective at getting him out, and they've been unsuccessful in keeping him from talking to Putin, from carrying on some cooperation with Russia, and also forming a friendship with the Chinese, he's broken their containment. And so and then with the financial crisis, they're driven to try to get rid of him. Now, one of the things that happens often in this kind of crisis is use of false flags, triggers of financial chaos, like what we could be seeing in the markets, could be a direct attempt to hurt Trump, because Trump has been, unfortunately, bragging about the stock market going up. And I wish he would stop that, because the stock market going up has nothing to do with his presidency and everything to do with trying to keep a bubble afloat. But in that context, we see the talk now coming from the old Bush network, from the Obama holdovers in the State Department and the Defense Department, and the continuation of the CIA to support terrorism, to provide arms to and protection for ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria, to support neo-Nazis in Ukraine. Their view is that they've never met a regime change or a war that they don't love. Not only do they make money from it, from defense contracting and other areas, consulting and so on, but the destabilization enables them to maintain their global control. And so what we have to watch out for is this gang changing the defense policy, or I should say keeping national defense policy the way it was under Bush and Obama, that we're going to get involved in wars, that our intelligence agencies are working with terrorists and other destabilization operations against friendly governments, and using things such as the North Korea situation. Now, on that, again, Trump is mixed. Trump still is talking to Putin. He still has the military working with the Russians in Syria. And the president of South Korea praised him, although for bringing together North and South Korea, even though you'd never know that from the media, which seems to have this image of Trump as trigger-happy and ready to launch a nuclear strike. If people are interested in reading my article, it's posted on my blog page, which is lpac.co/Harley, H-A-R-L-E-Y, or they can write to me directly at my email address, and I'll send it out to them, any one of your listeners. And that's harleysch@gmail.com, harleysch@gmail. And I think it's important for people to get a picture of how crazy these neocons are, because their view is if they can't control things, they're willing to blow the whole world up.
Yeah, as I usually do, Harley, I'm going to try to get a lot of these links right up in the description box so they can just go ahead and click it and get directly connected with you. But I appreciate you definitely getting out your email, and again, yeah, definitely listen into what Harley has to say in this area, because it's very, very important. I believe Paul Craig Roberts did a similar article within the past week or so. Now, yeah. there have also been recent articles, Harley, as you know, which are tackling this quote-unquote new Cold War, pun intended, if you will. You know, why strategically is this Arctic area so important? We see Russia and China kind of getting mixed up into it. You know, where does the United States stand? What, you know, what is so strategically important about the Arctic?
Well, if you start from Siberia and go north, you have some of the most rich, untapped deposits of strategic minerals, raw materials, uranium, titanium, all kinds of things that are essential for the economy we're moving into. That's one important point. Now, secondly, the New Silk Road is all about extending trade routes, connections. You know, we've talked about the importance of a Bering Strait tunnel, a tunnel under the Bering Straits that will connect the U.S. and Russia. The Chinese and the Russians are talking about, with the Japanese even, about routes across the Arctic. The world is coming closer, and there's a potential to move to what the Chinese call a win-win capability. Instead of confrontation, geopolitical conflict, actually working together for the benefit of each country. Now, I think that's what Trump means when he says America first. He says, we'll take care of our country first, but we're willing to work with anyone else who's doing the same for their country where it's in our interest. And so I think the return to the idea of nationalism from that standpoint is crucial, because you can be a patriot and still be a citizen of the world. So it's in our interest to open up these areas, just as it's in our interest to open up space for commercial use. So I think that what the Chinese and the Russians are doing is not part of a new Cold War, because the Chinese have said to Trump, we want you to come in and work with us. And Trump has told Xi Jinping he'd like the American corporations to be able to participate in this new Silk Road program.
Yeah, and for those who missed it, in gender-neutral news, I don't know if you saw this the other day, Harley, Trudeau apparently corrected a female who just so happened to use the word mankind and correct her, saying we should use the word people kind, or there's something along those lines. So the Orwellian newspeak continues on. We certainly don't want to offend any women or transgenders out there. I found that article in the past 24 hours to be somewhat amusing. But my next question for you, staying along the geopolitical front, and feel free to, you know, respond to what Trudeau has said if you don't, if you'd like to. But, you know, the mainstream media is kind of putting out there, you know, North Korea, Syria, China, Iran, in terms of, you know, being public enemy number one to America. Who is on, you know, your radar as being, you know, the number one enemy, if you will? You know, what area should we be really focusing in on? I know there's a lot of people concerned with the Olympics coming up. You know, what will transpire there? I saw it was actually this morning that China had moved 300,000 troops closer to the North Korea border. I mean, who knows what could happen in that area? But geopolitically speaking, you know, what's on your radar? What are we looking at?
I don't know. I hear the North Korean women's hockey team is pretty rough, and they're working together with South Korea. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. No, look, I would say two things. First of all, the identification of these enemy images is reminiscent of the axis of evil that right. Bush talked about. And it's the Dick Cheney neocon, we've got to have enemies. I would say the most dangerous spot right now in the world is Ukraine, because the Ukrainian parliament just voted to go ahead and invade eastern Ukraine to take away the autonomy that they agreed to in their talks in Minsk that were guaranteed by Russia, the United States, Germany, and France. And Russia's protested the government's decision, but the rest of the countries have been quiet. So you're talking about this extension of NATO to the border of Russia in what could become a shooting war very quickly. But beyond that, look, there are solutions to all of these things. The problem, I would say the most dangerous problem we have, is the continued control by Wall Street and the City of London over global finances, over institutions such as NATO, the Paris Accords, the Global 2000, the hatred of humanity, the idea there are too many people in the world. These are not countries. These are efforts by institutions to literally destroy the human race. And I know some people say when you say human, you're really saying the word man also. So maybe that labels me as old school. But the biggest problem is, as long as these people have power, as long as the J.P. Morgan Chase and the Goldman Sachs and the Rothschild networks, as long as they have power over governments, there's no place that's safe. Syria was a very safe place where the population, the Jewish population, the Christian population was protected by Assad. And then we turned it over upside down so that so-called Muslim jihadists were killing Christians and destroying Jews and their fellow Muslims. So who did that? That wasn't something in Syria, or look at Libya. This was done by Western financial and intelligence operations. So that, to me, is where the dangers are. And I think that's what I'm putting my efforts into addressing.
Good stuff from Harley Schlanger. Again, we can get to his website, LaRochePAC.com. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, this economic reset, if you will. Who knows? Maybe the masses across the board will just revolt. I know there's many of us here, at least from our community, that are expecting a revolution in this country in the not-so-distant future. But
Eric, you know, just on that, there has been an insurgency. That's how Trump got elected. That's what Brexit was. That's why the Italians keep voting down the EU and the government. That's why there's Spain is breaking apart. That's why we have no government here in Germany 5 months after the election. So there is an insurgency. We just need to get the insurgents behind a program.
Yeah, and that's an interesting and fair point. I know the New World Order, Freemasonry in general, flies behind that motto of, you know, out of chaos comes order. So they certainly want the chaos. It's just, you know, what's going to take control of it after is going to be the question.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, no doubt about it. Some very good points by Harley today. Yeah, I would just kind of label Western media, mainstream media, as a weapon of mindless destruction, if you will. And folks, listen. You know, it's dire times. We all got to continue to pray for our leaders, pray for this country. And I appreciate guests like Harley coming on and giving their insights as to what we're seeing economically, what we're seeing socially, politically, geopolitically. I mean, everything is happening so fast. It's truly hard to keep up on all of these current events. Again, look for in the description box all of Harley's social media. I'll try to get the actual article that Harley mentioned concerning the neocon crazies and war. I'll try to get that right up in the description box so you don't even have to go searching for it. And I want to thank you all for tuning in to Tradcat Night Radio today. Again, check into tradcatnight.blogspot.com daily. Click that PayPal button in the upper right-hand corner of the website. Get behind this apostolate in this information war. As you know, we go and grow as your charity flows. And who will tomorrow's special guest be? Well, you're going to have to tune in, folks, to find out. And until next time, my good friends, stay safe and God bless.